Hi, this is Lonnie Jordan, founding member of the band War, and I'm a big fan of KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles.
The Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett.
Everybody's talking about consciousness. Everybody wants that eternal kiss.
Everyone's saying there's more than this.
Everyone wants to follow their own bliss.
Talking about one love, one blood, one life.
On the Expansion Zone, we examine life and our quest to understand who and what we are and of the vastness of human potentials. We explore the making of our world from quantum physics to parapsychology, health, sociology, and philosophy, along with practical living. You are reminded of the possibilities in creating personal change. So for an hour, we'll stimulate and expand the mind. Well, welcome to another edition of The Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett. I'm, of course, your host, Sonia Barrett, and happy to be here, and as always, wishing you the best Monday possible. Today's show is really a tribute to Kalindi Iyi, who has been on the Expansion Zone quite a number of times. And I have been fortunate enough to have interviewed him a number of times over the past 10 years or more. And he has always been just an amazing individual, amazing being in the wealth of knowledge that he holds in so many subject matters, so many topics. And he passed away in March of this year, 2020. And so I wanted to air the very last show that we did with him in February of this year, 2020. And just to say that he will be truly missed by all. And wherever you are, Kalindi, in whatever form you're in at this time, continue to do what you do best on this journey. And it is to share who you are, to shed your light, and to present different levels of enlightenment to those who you come in contact with. So thank you for blessing our lives. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So I've got about three quotes for kicking off your week. And I really like these three quotes. They say a lot. And the first one is, your imagination is your preview of life's coming attractions. And that's by Albert Einstein. The second one is, someday is not a day of the week, by Denise Brennan Nelson. The third one is, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. And that's John Lennon. And I tell you, number two, all three of them are great. But, you know, the someday is not a day of the week, I think, is pretty special. Because when you spend time, you know, putting things off and, you know, things that you want to do, dreams, goals, and it's put in someday. And it's like, when is that? It's not a day of the week. So I think that's great. And, of course, imagination. Hey, you got to start with the imagination in order to create anything. I don't care what it is that you're making, from a building, a car, a book, you know, writing a poem, doesn't matter. I mean, it begins with the imagination. So it is a preview into, you know, what's possible, what's right around the corner, potentially, if you take that out of the someday realm and actually make it happen. So I just thought that would be great. It was good for me seeing those quotes, actually. So I wanted to share that. So today's topic is why the sudden hype of mainstream media on the health benefits of magic mushrooms. Of course, we're going to talk about more than that, but that's kind of what sparked my interest in connecting with the master of it all, Kalindi Iyi, who is our guest today. He's a mycologist and martial arts master, and of course a master when it comes to master educator and entheogens. So we're going to be chatting about that because it's coming up. So we've had marijuana, you know, is now somewhat legal. And so here we are now. We're on this other leg of seeing, you know, exactly what are they planning to do in terms of magic mushrooms, obviously, which is how they're talking about it or announcing it. And there's an excerpt from an article. Let's see, it was called Psilocybin Moves Closer to Becoming a Licensed Treatment for Depression by Marketline. And I just wanted to just read a little bit of this. And of course, Kalindi will chime in as he sees fit on that. Anyway, it says the FDA recently granted the drug breakthrough therapy status. This is a clear sign of commitment to develop psilocybin as a treatment for MDD, and MDD, of course, stands for major depression disorder. With the FDA on board, psilocybin could reach the U.S. pharmaceutical market as soon as 2021. As a psychedelic, psilocybin is illegal in most countries due to its hallucinogenic efforts. Because of this, it is widely considered to be a recreational drug, although a dose under 5 milligrams would not cause hallucinations. It is unclear if that would be enough to legalize it for therapeutic use. Furthermore, the pressure that the big pharma companies can exercise on legal institutions, insurance companies, and medical services may be the main obstacle to overcome by any company trying to commercialize a psilocybin-based treatment for MDD. Nevertheless, the entry of psychedelic drugs into the antidepressant market will certainly disrupt a market that has been stable since the appearance in the market of selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors in 1988. All right, so we've got some interesting things definitely on the scene in terms of what they choose to suddenly make available, what maybe somehow is going to be profitable, all of that good stuff. So our guest, as I said, is Kalindi Iyi. Kalindi Iyi has been featured on local and national television programs such as 60 Minutes and Strange Universe. Kalindi was honored on the Martial Arts Masters produced by Wesley Snipes as one of the masters of the martial arts in the 20th century. He is a mycologist and has presented on the subject of psilocybin as far north as Norway and as far south as Australia. So, Kalindi, welcome back to the Expansion Zone.
Well, glad to be back. Thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and your audience.
Yeah, and we love talking to you. We love things that kind of, you know, are off the beaten path or, you know, a little bit, well, I'm not going to say a little bit, but completely over the edge. I like going over the edge. So we are happy to have you here. Now, you heard everything that I was saying. And
Yes. Yeah,
so I kind of want to just, you know, get your input, and then we'll dive into other things because this is not new. This is, you know, nature's technology that's been around forever. So what would you say about this? I mean, obviously, you've seen that this is what's coming.
Well, it's moving towards mainstream by the FDA going ahead and, you know, letting different companies do clinical trials with, you know, different substances. And since we're talking about mushrooms pretty much specifically today with depression, it's one of the best ways of dealing with depression. Many people now are self-medicating psilocybin for depression because psilocybin mushrooms are, number one, they're non-addicting. Number two, you can't harm yourself with them. And number three, they get the job done without all the contraindications of pharmaceutical drugs in this realm. And, you know, places like John Hopkins and, you know, the University of Pennsylvania, University of Pennsylvania in Pittsburgh and places like this are, you know, doing their own research and studies and things like this because it gets the job done. And if it wasn't for Richard Nixon with the war on drugs, we wouldn't be in this position. By now, we'd be a lot further down the line as far as the adoption of the utilization of psilocybin, magic mushrooms, psychedelics, in dealing with many of the ills that are part of the Western world. You know, that's why we have troves of people from Europe and the United States and other places around the world that are going to Peru and Brazil and places in South America to, you know, take on the psychedelics of those places. And in the United States now that Oakland, California, Chicago, Denver are all dealing with decriminalization of the magic mushroom for, you know, for whatever usage that the person sees fit, as long as they're adult over 21 years old, meaning that not just as a therapy for psychological ends, but also recreationally and spiritually. You know, it's given the, at least these few cities, a way of their citizens being able to make the choice of whether to use these compounds or not. So it's moving towards mainstream adoption, mostly every state and every, you know, large city has a decriminalization legislation going before its council and things like that to give adults the chance to be able to make their own choices with these compounds that, one thing about them is that they work. So, yeah, these things are going on. Matter of fact, in Michigan, Ann Arbor, Michigan, where the University of Michigan is, they have a decriminalization of all natural plants and natural psychedelics going before their city council and things like that. And other places around the country are doing the same.
Well, as you mentioned, you know, a lot of people are going outside of the country. And I remember watching a documentary on, I remember if it was PBS, but, you know, and I know of other folks. I know of an institution actually also in Mexico treating people for substance abuse and PTSD. But I remember these vets, I mean, they were so excited to go to Colombia to do this for PTSD and the impact that it had on all these folks. So people have had to find their own way, like you said, of going to make this happen. So do you think that's why that they're finally saying, you know, let's put it on the table for legalizing? I mean, just kind of like they've done with marijuana. You know, they just usually don't do anything just because. So I'm like,
no, there's an agenda because there's a usage for these things that can be lucrative because different products made from the hallucinogenic mushroom are coming into the field and the fold now. And so salons for ingestion and things like that, just like, you know, you have the different categories of stores and shops and things like that that are selling cannabis. It's the same with the mushroom. You can, you know, once these things are decriminalized, there'll be industry built up around it where people can come and, you know, partake of psilocybin under a controlled setting and things like that. And then, of course, there'll be those people who choose to do it in the comfort of their own home under their own direction for their own purpose. So as it mainstreams, it'll ultimately in a few years be in a place where it won't even be worried about or talked about, you know, just like cannabis, although it's in its infancy. You know, in Detroit, they had passed recreational cannabis, and, you know, the detractors, you know, just assumed that the day that this law went into effect would be the last day on earth, and that people would be riding around and running around smoking and creating not only difficulties, but, you know, putting people, putting young women in danger and, you know, the whole nine yards. But actually what happened was the day came and it went, and mostly, almost to 99%, everybody who smoked cannabis prior to the law still smoked. And those people who didn't smoke cannabis before the law didn't run and start smoking. So it was just kind of like a regular day, and it came and went.
Right.
So it'll be the same thing with psilocybin or magic mushroom derivatives. It'll be the same thing. It'll be something that'll be talked about for a minute, and then after a while, it'll fade into the background, and those people who utilize it will, and those people that don't will not. You know, especially in the United States, people are—they have very short attention spans. They did that when they changed the length of commercials. You know, commercial used to be 2 minutes; now it's broken into bite-sized pieces because people can't sit still long enough on the commercial not to change the channel. So. It's the same here. You know, you have a different distraction every quarter, and it runs a couple of weeks. You know, if it's not Iran 1 week and the presidential, you know, the president being impeached the next couple of months, and now the next one is the coronavirus.
I mean, they keep you busy.
People have forgotten about Iraq and invading and the plane being shot out the sky and all of that. And when they acquit President Trump today or tomorrow, that'll fade in the background in a couple of days. People will talk and be mad and all that. The election will come around again. He'll be reelected, and there'll be some more nonsense for people to go through to be distracted from things that really mean things.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that because it's so true. I mean, that's exactly what happens. It's distraction after distraction after distraction. And again, it's like a child. I always say it's like a child is crying. And then you show the child the shiny red ball, and then the child stops, you know. But then you take it away, and the child starts crying again. But then you show the child something else, and then, you know, they go to that. But, yeah, it's really interesting. But one of the things that I also looked at, Kalindi, is the manner in which things get reengineered. And I guess I always look at that, particularly now because I'm going to say marijuana because that's the thing that we've got, legalized to a degree at this time. All these different strands of things. I mean, will it be the same thing with mushrooms? There's always interference, is my point, whenever things get okayed by the system.
Well, the thing is that with the cannabis, you know, people still have the ability to be able to grow their own.
Yes, if they choose to, if they know better.
Yes, if they choose that. And the same with psilocybin. Most of the studies that will be done, and the majority of the psilocybin that will be out will be medical grade psilocybin. Ultimately, they will not use the mushrooms themselves, but a derivative of the mushroom that can be dosed out specifically in specific manners, because one thing about mushrooms is that they vary in their potency and constituents according to how they're grown. You know, the free air exchange makes a difference, how much humidity is when they're growing, and all these different factors, what particular substrate they're grown on, all these things are factors in potency. And if you're trying to have something for a medical abnormality, you need exact dosages. And the only way they could do that is with a synthetic form or a derivative that is captured that could be perfectly measured. So a lot of it, what they'll be talking about, the psilocybin mushroom, because psilocybin is a constituent of the mushroom, this will be medical grade psilocybin that they'll be using in the majority of cases, unless people are growing it for other reasons, and people are or may be self-medicating with the psilocybin mushroom. So it's going to be tampered with, you
mm-hmm.
know,
yeah,
things like that.
And that's why I'm bringing it up. I'm bringing this up because that's what I'm here to do, is to expand your mind and to just remind you that, you know, even now, people that are going and buying, you know, whatever it is they're buying, that it's a lot of, you know, reengineering. So just know what it is that you're getting. Even if it's food, doesn't matter what it is. Just be aware of what it is that you are getting. That's the point that I am making right now, which is why I'm mentioning this. You cannot just, especially when things are FDA approved. Let me put it this way so I don't say something that I shouldn't say. When I see things advertised, for example, there's eggs that are being advertised now, the organic eggs. Whenever I see things advertised, I generally know on TV that I'm not going to get that. Once I see that they're advertising it, I'm like, okay, well, I'll be sure not to get that one. So that's the point I'm making. So, Kalindi, I would like to get give the audience as well some deeper insight into you know, the technology of the plant, of nature, of what we're talking about. And of course, it's so deep. And you also said something on an interview. I heard just like a clip of it. And you said that the manner in which that we disrespect, you know, we're disrespectful to the trees. We're basically disrespectful to nature, even when we think we're being respectful. And that kind of stuck with me. But anyway, so anywhere you want to kind of chime in there is great.
Well, it's like this. The earth, the whole earth, is permeated with mycelium. Mycelium is the precursor to plants and animals and flowering plants and non-flowering things like that, because mushrooms were on earth and in abundance prior to these other kingdoms coming into existence. So since different types of fungi pulverize the rocks with their different acids and enzymes, it's permeated in the soil. So the soil has mushroom mycelium in it, and it's all over the earth, and it's kind of like an internet that connects the earth to everything in the earth, because you have a relationship between the mycelium and the plants, and you have a relationship between the mycelium, the plants, and the animals, and, you know, that goes through mammals and then insects and all the others also. So you have this connection between the basis, which is the fungi, which is the mushroom mycelium, and all of the other creatures. So we're connected. And then there is a connection between our utilization of of outside or exogenous neurochemicals that are in nature outside of the human body that come into the body through ingestion and have specific measures of information that it imparts to the particular being that it ingests and becomes one with these chemicals. So the fungal chemicals, the plant chemicals, the inner neural, the inner body chemicals are all reflecting and bouncing off of one another to help deal with consciousness, understanding, the fulfillment of the prime directives inside of consciousness, and all of these different types of things. So mycelium is the basis. The fungi, the mushroom, is the basis. And us utilizing this technology from nature that was deposited there for us to be able to ingest, it was there so that we could have more knowledge and understanding of how the planet relates to not only the creatures that are upon it, but also the other planets as far as distance, as far as how they relate to one another energetically and things like this. So trees and grasses and different type of flowering plants are all in constant communication with the mycelium network that is underground, that has a mycorrhizal relationship with the root systems that get into man and get into cows and get into other animals that are on the earth. So nature is all part of that. But the thing is that the mycelium that permeates the earth, that has this information, is relating that information to human beings. That's what's spurring the technological evolution. You know, it's just like in Silicon Valley, the different types of inventions and extensions of technology are coming out of the people in Silicon Valley ingesting things like mushrooms and LSD and other things that are pushing forward the technology. I mean, Steve Jobs talked about it was one of the five most important things in his life when he was taking LSD. And he had mushrooms and things like that also. But he said LSD, as far as technologically being able to help him think outside of the box and expand his consciousness to be able to help in the organization of bringing in the right people to make the Apple phone and the iBook and all these other different type of things that Apple has developed, all part of that. As a matter of fact, in hiring these people early on for Apple, Steve Jobs would ask them, you know, had they taken any psychedelics. If they hadn't taken any psychedelics, he wouldn't hire them, because as their motto says, you know, think differently.
Right.
You know, think different. Mm-hmm. Think outside of the box.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how we get these different types of things. But the main purpose of the psilocybin mushroom is not its medical utilization, but the explorative areas, the dealing with the consciousness and the expansion of consciousness. You know, that's what its true first number one purpose is. And the other things, recreation, the spiritual aspect, you know, the medical aspect, the psychological aspect, all parts of this, you know, because what we're gonna have to do and deal with, even in dealing with the understanding of how all these things are put together is through the ingestion of that same mushroom that we're talking about this afternoon.
Yeah, that it was a very clear explanation and summary. I think that we're gonna probably stop and take a break. Take our break right now. There's a couple things that I'd like to insert in the conversation as well. So let's go to break right now. And of course, when we return, we will continue this interesting conversation. So stay tuned.
Looking for a unique way to support KPFK? Consider donating property you no longer need. It could be an inherited home, a vacant lot, or a piece of land that's just not part of your plan anymore. Your gift helps fund the programs you rely on and love. Get started today. Visit kpfk.org/real estate or call 844-277-4663 to learn more about real estate donations.
And we are back. And of course, you are listening to The Expansion Zone with Sonia Barrett. And of course, it's on KPFK 90.7 FM, which is what you're tuned into here in Southern California. And if you are on the web, it's of course streaming live at kpfk.org. My guest today is Kalindi Iyi, and we are speaking about this change, this technology of magic mushrooms, let's say then, and this vast network that we are all connected with. And I really love the way that he explained it, because that's how I talk about, you know, our connection, because we're not taught that way. to really see ourselves as part of a vast network. And everything that Kalindi said, now if you take that down to a much smaller level and you think about fruits and vegetables, why it's best to eat things that come from nature. Well, because it's all part of that network, and that network has information that is that your body needs. It already knows, you know, it knows the system, and the body is a system as well. So we are part of a, you know, this bigger system. It's nothing but a lot of different tiny systems in a massive system, a massive network, networks in bigger networks. And so I think, you know, to look at it that way, and even Kalindi, just the thought of chlorophyll, you know, eat green leafy vegetables. You know, why is that? The chlorophyll is trapped sunlight. So here we are, we're eating sunlight, which has a whole lot of information in it that we need. So I'm saying all of that just to sort of pull it all together to show that this is something we're doing. We are already doing, because we have no choice. We are part of this network. And so he's bringing this other level of it that we've been sort of blocked from or given a bad rap about it. So what's interesting is some years ago, I know when we did an interview, and you talked about the shamans and the chief of many of these, you know, tribes. And they were the ones, I think, at one point that maybe would take the whatever that was, the mushroom, and then sort of, you know, get tap into the technology of it and then come back with that information. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I mean, that's how the civilizations were built. You find around the Pyramid of the Sun in Mexico, you would have found in the area surrounding the mushrooms that actually built it, that gave us the technological plans to be able to build that pyramid. If you look at Angkor Wat in Cambodia, the mushrooms grow around the temple because those are the same mushrooms that early man and woman in their infancy, prior to having a way of building or understanding how to build a large, massive temple, went into novel states of consciousness, utilizing the hallucinogenic powers of the mushroom to glean and bring back knowledge and information to be able to put these things together. Because most of the technology of what we had is from older systems, from libraries and record halls of those who early in our existence had the courage enough to ingest high doses of the psychedelics to be able to go into these realms of consciousness and bring back knowledge and information for that particular purpose.
Well, I'm going to just say this real quickly too, because I'm thinking about it, but we're talking about this today, but let me be clear. I am not saying that whoever is listening that you go and you need to do this. I am giving the information. We are sharing this. So you make your choices. And I think that my intention is to bring a greater level of information so that you can continue to do your own research in terms of whatever it is that you choose to do. So I just wanted to be clear on that. Whatever you do, make sure you know what it is that you're doing. You've researched. So anyway, so that is pretty interesting to me. Go ahead, Kalindi.
No, so I'm saying that a lot of the information that we have was gleaned from these other exceptional places. And by utilizing that, I mean, in different guilds, you know, how long did it take before man and woman learned how to build boats? And then how long did it take for them to understand how not to lose the boat by being able to tie it to something on shore? And then how long did it take them to learn the knots to be able to be tied so that it could be loosely taken apart but wouldn't with the boat rocking, pull it loose and the boat float out into the water. So, I mean, these type of informational structures took time, but by going into these novel states of consciousness, it was deposited into the public domain of the consciousness of the people who were together as a family group, as a little town or city or major national area called the country. The priesthood or the different guilds of priesthoods, you know, because you what we think of as priesthoods now and what we thought of as priesthoods in the ancient days were two different things. I'm just using the term priesthood so that I don't have to go through the plethora of different names that these things were called. The smart people of the society, the elders, the one you came to figure out how to do things, these were the what they used to call the witch doctor and the hoodoo person and all of these different types of names. Now the colloquial term is shaman for those people who specialize in dealing with novel states of consciousness to be able to help society. These people were compensated by getting food by people who had food, who would bring certain things that the person who was the spiritual person needed, because they did and dealt with their spiritual things, and the farmer dealt with his physical farm things, and there was a barter system to be able to be compensated because everybody's performing a particular task in society that holds society together. And this came from those sojourns out into the multiverse and bringing back information on, you know, if we get a couple of those big cows and we get a few of those little cows and we learn how to build a fence, we can fence them in and they'll make other little cows for us. So we'll have more cows and we'll be able to not worry about starving because we're not wandering around looking for food. All these different types of things came from those knowledgeable sessions that people got from older, more pristine civilizations. And I say more pristine and older because it would take us a lot more time than the supposed 14 billion years or 22 billion years, the new numbers, of us being able to do the simple things in society that we do. It would take much longer. And the exponential growth now that we're in the technological realms makes things move faster and faster and faster. It'll almost come to a nexus point where everything is happening all at the same time consciously. And what type of filters would we use to be able to function in a multiverse of a multiplicity of factors going on simultaneously in the consciousness of the human beings?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, what another thing I find fascinating is, you know, just having this conversation and just being reminded as to how narrow and crafted our belief system and our reality, then the idea of reality, or you know, or the safe perspectives, or sort of this particular design, this orchestrated design of beliefs. That's what people live under. This is, you know, this is what we live under. And of course, that gets run through all of our systems, our educational systems and religious systems. And that's why they're, you know, these systems in place to sort of organize, I think, our thinking, organize a particular way that we will think and operate. And so that's why conversations like this, to me, starts to stretch the mind if the mind is not already in that, you know, state of wanting to be stretched. So, yes, everything that you're saying is very significant to the building of our societies.
Yeah. Well, we're in a point where things are moving pretty quickly and changing pretty quickly. And ultimately and eventually, the old paradigms will fall away, and people will start thinking for themselves. They're saying that the Christian church is losing people by the tens of thousands every weekend, because it's the same old hierarchical paradigm that has been going on, through all the religious structures since the Younger Dryas impact. It's a area where the way that people think, the way that they have organized these religious structures in the hierarchical sense always puts you, it always makes you not be the most important thing, when in reality, you are the most important thing that's going on, because you have to be sensible and cognizant of the world and the reality in which you live. Because number one, if you don't put yourself at the most important spot, then you can't be of any service to anybody else, because you're always giving energy to areas of the earth that aren't improving yourself. When you improve yourself, you improve everything and everyone around you.
Absolutely.
And the earth also, because mm-hmm. we're in a feedback loop where, we are gathering strength, energy, knowledge, information from the earth, and we are putting that right back into the earth so that everything is going and moving forward. But the old paradigms are that, what's the thing? You are a sinner and shaped in this iniquity. You are nothing. You're lowly, it just puts you in a bad position. And, we have taken for thousands of years and put that at the forefront. But there's a sidebar of people who have broken the code, and they're the people that are running and pulling sustenance from the rest of the world. How can you have people who have hundreds of billions of dollars, and then you have a whole country? You have five people that have more mm-hmm. money than most of the countries on earth.
Mm-hmm.
Five people. Warren Buffett and them. How can you have 300 or 400 billion dollars, and you have people starving on earth?
Yeah.
And all he does, what can you do with $300 billion that you can't do with $1 billion?
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's just power.
Other than set up things to make more money. You can't live in so many houses. You can't drive but so many cars. You can't eat but so much food.
And they still wouldn't be able to spend it, even if they did all that.
They still wouldn't be able to spend it. You're correct. So why, if they want to be telling people what to do, you redistribute the wealth. But when you say that, you're being an anarchist. You're being, you're out the box. You don't believe in, capitalism and democracy and apple pie, because he's saying that, people shouldn't be able to have an insane amount of money when there is lack in most of the parts of the world,
Yeah, it is definitely. I mean, I think that kind of thinking that we probably would define as greed, and I certainly have nothing against wealth and people being wealthy, so I have nothing against that. But what I think what we're looking at, or what I'm looking at, is when people get into that kind of money, they do feel so invincible, because they feel like they can purchase it, do anything to anybody. They're sort of untouchable. At least they feel untouchable. And so I think that compassion or any of those feelings, I think, tend to become very distant in their minds. It's just getting more. It's power. It's just this power rush. I mean, that's high.
If it's about wealthy, it's about everybody being wealthy. Everybody having enough to do the things that they need to do to live and survive, and then extra to be able to do the things and pursue the things that you want to pursue. You know, it's like when, I don't know which Star Trek Next Generation movie it was, the one with Alfie Woodard.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what do you do in the 24th century? How do you work? What's your job? And Picard totally said, we don't have no jobs. You know, everything is taken care of, and we pursue our intellectual gifts. We if we're a musician, we expand and utilize our music. If you're a person who wants to be able to build things, you put your time into building things and being happy and things like this. Not the whole Christian edict of if you don't plow the ground, you won't eat type thing. You know.
Yeah. But
you know, the work ethic, you know, you must have a job. That's like the people who hit the lottery for $500 million and they ask them, what are they going to do? Well, you know, we're going to put a new front porch on and I think I'll get a pair of new tires and I'm not going to stop working. I'm going to keep working because, you know, I have to do something, you know.
Right.
Why don't you go to Paris and walk through the Louvre? Why don't you go to Africa and sit down at a evening session of the village playing music? Why don't you pursue the things that you may have wanted to do, you know, go to school and not to, you know, go to school for something like basket weaving or, you know, carpentry, you know,
right,
like doll making, you know, pursue your happiness, pursue things that are going to help you to grow and move forward intellectually and physically, you know, but you want to go down there and insult the people who are 2 weeks from the street, 2 weeks from them taking their car that allows them to get to work. You insult them by getting $500 million and still coming down there working, taking a job from somebody who needs it. When you should be on the beach getting a massage, looking at the sunset and looking in the eyes of your spouse while y'all drinking pineapple coconut juice.
When you put it that way, it is an insult. I didn't quite think of it from the insulting side of it, but it kind of is. That would be kind of irritating. And you're here because what? I mean, you know, as you sit at your desk and you look over and you're here. Yeah, it's, you know, it's a game, you know, it is. And that's what we've been playing. It's the monetary game. And that's the game right there is if everybody is in a balanced state and financially balanced, then there wouldn't be the wealth factor. They couldn't have that. So so that's the whole trick to this thing here. And, you know, Kalindi, I know we're getting close, but we still have a little time. One of the things that kind of popped into my mind again is that whole eating that apple thing, and then suddenly they're aware of, like, it reminds me, of course, of, you know, the mushrooms or somebody, you know, becoming awakened because they've partaken of some sort of technology of this nature.
Well, the whole thing about the tree of knowledge and the tree of eternal life is that they're one and the same, because through the knowledge you understand your eternal life. And there are many old paintings and things like that where the expulsion from the garden wasn't an apple, that it was actually a mushroom.
That's what I mean.
It gave the knowledge the knowledge of the world and how things are connected, and how things in a greater capacity are connected in other things that aren't of the physical, that aren't of the prime three-dimensional five-sense reality in which we are embedded.
It's all the network.
And yes. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's where the knowledge came from. And for those that choose, you know, at some point in time to the physical immortality, you know, because that's not a joke or anything like that. because technologically you can, you know, assume that position of immortality.
You know, that's my work.
One of the biggest, one of the biggest obstacles is that our thought process won't allow us to assume that position. In other words, you know, everybody got to die. You know, nobody getting out of here alive. Those are mantras. Those are mantras that people, if they just stop saying it, you start getting people who start becoming immortal just by taking that out of the public domain of consciousness. You know,
well, but yeah, you know,
but and still in understanding, you know, death is what gives life meaning.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it special.
It's also a program.
It makes it, yeah, it makes, you know, so for the continuous life
mm-hmm.
is the immortality. In mm-hmm. other words, no matter where you go, you're there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
No matter where you go, you're here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which means just in that language that you never, the only thing, one thing I learned from mushrooms was that the only thing impossible in the multiverse is to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a continuum, you know, form, change. In other words, you know, no longer in the physical reality, but you are in a greater reality than the physical reality. You are a entity of your own imagination, as you said earlier. Not bound by the physics of the game, the puzzle game of which we exist in, a simulation embedded in simulations
mm-hmm.
of the highest order. You know, we're in this game, and we've trapped ourselves in here because of the way that we think about what this thing is. And mushroom gives you a way to hack the code.
So there's much here. Thank you so much, Kalindi. Thanks to the listening audience. Again, visit theexpansionzone.com. Thanks to our engineer, D'Angelo Jones. Also, if you'd like to know more about me and my work, do visit therealsoniabarrett.com. And as always, I like to remind you to live life to its fullest and question everything. Until next time, see you then.
Sing Om Shanti, 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 Shanti. 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 Om Shanti, 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 Shanti.
We can be the change.
Om Shanti, 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 Shanti.
Wilgear Theatricum Botanicum returns this June 6th through October 4th with outdoor repertory theater, events, and educational programs for all ages. A Midsummer Night's Dream is back, alongside Romeo and Juliet, Treasure Island, Noel Coward's Waiting in the Wings, and Bernardo Cubría's dark and incisive new comedy, The People of Pompeii, set in the aftermath of the 2025 Palisades fire. Theatricum is located in Topanga Canyon, just off the 101 freeway, in the shade of the California live oaks. Explore and picnic in the gardens before the show. Further information available at www.theatricum.com and at kpfk.org.
I'm Andrew Tonkovich of KPFK's weekly literary arts show, Bibliocracy.
Support this program and the station by hitting the online donations button at kpfk.org. Choose the monthly donation option and, like me, become a sustainer.